right, so the date is June 14th, 2018. My name is Avery Pilot, and I am here today with Norma Chinchilla, and we will be talking about Madison in the 60s. So without further ado, would you like to start by telling me about some of your recollections and stories from this era?
Well, I came to Madison in 1966. I had absolutely no idea to be part of the PhD program in sociology at the university. I had absolutely no idea where I was going. I knew nobody here. I didn't really know about the reputation of the university. I kind of told my friends, came from California, that I was going to the East Coast. Well, I don't know if I said coast, but I thought it was going east. Anyway, I discovered it was the Midwest. But I thought I was a political person when I came here, but it turns out I came here in a time that was extremely political, and I learned so much, especially from other students, both within sociology and because of all the activities, the political activities on campus and in the community. So I came from two backgrounds. One was an experimental undergraduate experience that was small and intense, but absolutely wonderful. It was college within the University of Pacific on the Oxford model. Our teachers often lived on campus with us. We had small tutorials and seminars. And I never felt any real discrimination as a woman. I was always encouraged by my professors, and they believed in me and rewarded me. And then I got a Fulbright fellow to go to Guatemala for a year. And in Guatemala, it was a whole new experience of living under a de facto dictatorship, but also being exposed to Latin American students and their political activism and the concept of sociology in Latin America, which was highly political, and where students felt like it was their job to change the world. So I get to Wisconsin, and there are some very political students here from New York and New Jersey in particular, and they're sitting in seminar rooms when I walk in debating things that I've never heard of in my entire life, like, was Lenin or Rosa Luxemburg right on the theory of imperialism? And I'm thinking, oh my God, I need to go look this up. This seems to be something you're supposed to know about. I know about Republicans and Democrats, and how do you spell Luxembourg? I'm not sure. And you know, there's no internet. You can't just sit there and Google it. So you feel like, oh, somehow you're not well educated. Somehow to be a sociology student, you're supposed to know about all of these amazing things that some of these kids had grown up with. They had talked with their grandparents who were maybe Jewish immigrants from Russia, or their parents had been organizers for the IWW, or they grew up in New York and as first generation children of immigrants, and I came from the suburbs. my grandparents were immigrants, and one of my grandparents did become a political person sort of in the Roosevelt era. But so I remember feeling completely intimidated. They admitted a huge number of students in my cohort. I think it was about 100. Somebody said it was more. And later on, I found out that they really only expected about a third of us to survive. So it was very much a pressure cooker situation. Goodness. So I thought, well, how did I get myself into this? I came from Guatemala, where students were trying to overthrow the government and create liberty and democracy. And here I was in a place where students were also politicized, but somehow I had to survive academically. And as a woman, you didn't really feel empowered in classes. The men talked a lot. They seemed to be very articulate. And the women held back and said very little. And all of a sudden, I was no longer an extrovert. I was sort of an introvert who just did my work as much as possible, read everything I could, and didn't say anything unless I was called on. And later on, after I got out of graduate school and began teaching in my first jobs at universities, I realized, oh, that was sexism. That was a culture that was very much preferred males over females. And it was, at the time, I thought it was because I just wasn't smart enough or educated enough. But really, everything that you began to read in the women's movement described what we had experienced in college, in graduate school. The things like being interrupted constantly, or you just said something really brilliant, nobody says a word, and then some guy says it, and all of a sudden everybody said, that's really good, I hadn't thought about that before. And you're sitting there wondering what just happened. Mm-hmm. Or you go to challenge your professor with some intellectual idea and he starts flirting with you and you're like, wait a minute. I mean, you kind of fall into it and you do it, and then afterwards you realize something's wrong, but you don't have any language for it. So I realized that part of my experience was very much determined by that, and also by just a kind of a conflict between what we as students wanted from our professors in our department and what they wanted. They wanted a department that was number one. They wanted a department that was more and more statistical all the time, because they thought if they were statistical, the government would pay more attention to sociology and to the recommendations we had for society. So if we were like economics, and we were like, hey man, you know, statistics, it's okay a little bit, but not three courses and high level statistics and doing calculations by hand. And it just seemed very medieval, really. And so a lot of students dropped out. A lot of very active students dropped out, especially after their master's degrees. And each year I would say, I've got to hang on. I've got to just do one more year. What will I do if I drop out? I'll have to go back home to California, you know, to the suburbs and live with my parents. And I'd already been to see the world. I didn't want to go back and live in Fremont, California. So, and besides, I went to graduate school because I thought having a PhD would allow me to help change the world. So I just got through by telling myself that I just had to finish one year. And then I told myself, well, after you finish that year, you got one more year and you can have your master's degree. And it just was overwhelming, but I kept telling myself one more year. And I think back now, and I think it's because we didn't have female role models. I think there was one woman on the faculty. I don't think she was very prominent, let's say, or consulted or respected. And so we didn't realize we were pioneers, but we really were. And we had all those feelings that people do when they're the first and where the culture's already formed in a way. So now we know that some of the big male student leaders, that some of their famous slogans and famous speeches actually were written by their girlfriends who later got rid of them and became famous, you know, leaders in their own right. But I think it's really important. I think it was a very important time to be here. I'm really glad I made it through. It marked me for life. It's given me a lot of tools. I am an activist now. I continue to be an activist. I've never not been an activist. but I think it wasn't easy, let's just put it that way. And just a detail of a person coming from California the first winter, it was, I mean, talk about torture. It was, first of all, you didn't have any friends, really, because you'd just come, right, in September, and then the winter hits, and everybody goes indoors. And you don't have those kinds of friends yet that are inviting you indoors. Mm-hmm. And it's very lonely. And you don't have, like, these high-tech clothes that everybody has access to today for skiing and for athletics. You have to go to you find out that people go to the men's department in Sears, to the workman's part, to get like thermal socks or, you know, things that you have find out about that you didn't know about in California. And you're just freezing all the time. So I remember that the locals told me, well, the way you walk home from the university is you stop when you get cold, you stop at a bar and you have a beer. And then when you get warm, you go out and you go another stage. And if you can get home with that one beer, you have one beer. If not, you can have two beers. And so that was pretty much a two-beer walk to my home. Yeah. And the other thing that really I remember so much was the cosmopolitanism of the university. I had very close friends in the PhD program from Africa, from Latin America and from Eastern Europe. And that in itself was another whole education outside of the classroom. I learned so much from them. And I kept contact with some of them over the years. And some of them did end up in very difficult situations in prison or even dead because of coups or something that happened in their country back home. But I think it's really important the kind of education you get outside of the formal classroom education here. And Madison was, it really was the Berkeley of the 60s, but I had no idea that that's where fate was putting me.
Wow, that's wonderful to hear. Just as a follow-up question, mm-hmm. you mentioned that you continue to be an activist. Were you part of any student organizations or activist groups while you were a PhD student here?
I wasn't a formal part of any organization. I supported, I had friends who were in the Wisconsin Alliance, and in CALA, I think that was later, the around Latin America. And I was involved in a lot of those activities. I went to a lot of teach-ins, but I was not a member of, I never felt like I had time.
Yeah.
But I was very much involved in things. For even the Dow Chemical demonstration was right in front of my office. So when they started throwing tear gas, we were all out there, and we ran to get my major professor, who ended up trying to get the police to, Marie Seidland, to try to get the police to stop beating the students. And so we were quite politicized in my department, but I.
Wow, that's really interesting. And you mentioned that you have a background in education and that mm-hmm. you have been involved in teaching since. What are some, do you see a lot of progress in the way that women have their own agency in education? Do you see a lot of improvements, changes?
I think there's been tremendous change. I got out and it was still very, with my PhD, and I had no idea how difficult it was going to be. I got my first job in a liberal arts college, but halfway through, the two sort of radical professors that had been hired didn't get renewed, me and another person, even though we were supported by people in our department. So that was a shock, because I thought you took a job, you'd have it for life. So I ended up later at University of California, Irvine for 8 years at a Research One university. And again, I was in something like an ethnic studies department. And notoriously, they sort of turn on each other, and we ended up in an eternal fight where two of the guys who were closest to me ended up not supporting me for tenure. My department chair, because I had had a baby, refused to support me for tenure. He thought that that was a violation of ethical conduct to have a child. I didn't know that. Oblivious, you know, I thought we could have it all. Of course, I underestimated what it meant to have it all. But so I went through a horrible tenure battle, and there was a lot of discrimination. But some of the people that fought with me there, we were trying to start a women's studies program. I forgot that important piece of information, which is why the guys turned on me. I never thought they would feel threatened by it. I just was naive and didn't realize. But in the end, a lot of those women did manage to get tenure, even though I didn't. And they went on to be deans. And there's a thriving women's studies program there today. It's very strong. Lots of things have changed. And I ended up at Cal State Long Beach teaching, and it turned out to be a wonderful place for me. So I've had a really wonderful career. I've been able to influence a lot of students, especially working class students, first generation students, children of immigrants. And it just turned out that I was very lucky to land in all these places, including lucky to get a scholarship to University of Wisconsin.
That's wonderful. And just a final question to kind of wrap things up. What are your biggest takeaways and biggest lessons from your time in Wisconsin that have really stuck with you for these past 50 years?
I think the fact that we can make change, that when we organize and fight together and have a clear strategy and in the case of sociology, it's not hard to combine what you're reading, what you're learning with your desire for change. And I learned a lot about organizing, like how people really organize. I learned also about how you change people's minds, because some of the friends I had came in as right-wing Republicans and ended up as some of the most devoted activists, their parents would say on the left wing. But I just realized the power of ideas and the right circumstances to change people's minds.
Wow. Yeah. That's really wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing your stories with us. I really appreciate it, Norma. And we will follow up with you if we have any more questions, and we'll let you know on the website.